unpack your knives and stay. It is the return of the Judge's Table podcast. Here at Rob Has a Website, Reality Wrap-Ups, I am Antonio Mazzaro. This is Top Chef. We're talking about Top Chef again this season. And I'm joined by a mix of returning hosts, some of whom are memorable, some of whom maybe less memorable. Guys, it's Josh Wigler, Mike Bloom, Kurt Clark. How are you?
I am
feeling very unmemorable right now.
My butthole is puckered.
Well, that's the end of the podcast.
All right, hashtag.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It was said on the episode. It was said on the episode.
That doesn't mean it needs to be said again.
Yeah, exactly, Mike. Do you want to talk about slavery next? Kurt, how are you?
Bro, I am stoked to be here. This is dope.
Okay, Kurt is apparently now Sam. Yes, memorable. All these guys are memorable. Hopefully you remember us from our previous seasons of the Top Chef Judges Table podcast here at Rob Has a Website. If you have never listened, and if you don't remember, welcome. Thank you for listening. We talk here about Top Chef every week. We'll be here in some way, shape, or form every week after each Top Chef episode, talking about the cooking, the quick fires, the eliminations, the ups, the downs, the who's, the ins and the outs, and the what have yous. And that's what we do here. We do it with a little bit of humor and a little bit of snark. And we do a draft at the beginning of the season, which we'll be doing in this episode for mostly bragging rights, where we talk trash about each other's chefs that get eliminated. So we make their bad day even worse. And that's what we're here to do this season. But you're a big part of this listening. We love your feedback. You can always tweet at us. You can also leave comments on our show pages as we post the podcast, and we'll definitely take your thoughts and questions going forward throughout the season here about Top Chef. Guys, are you excited by this format? Returnees versus, well, not so, let's not say fans, let's just say favorites from Top Chef versus Top Chef chef testants for the first time.
Do we even want to say favorites?
Yeah, I was going to say, I know we like can sort of adopt the fans versus favorites theme, and I know I have when I've talked about it with non-Top Chef fans, but this is more so just the general theme of half returning players, half new players. Which I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, previous reputations. Some are probably not as well known. Some are probably not as of a good reputation as some other big fan favorites. But I guess I'll say, if we have to choose one reality show out there that has to have this format, I guess Top Chef or something along the lines of this, or Project Runway, might be the best show to use this format. Because what do we always say about, you know, when you have fans versus favorites on Top Chef, on Survivor or Big Brother? You say, oh, the newbies are at an inherent disadvantage because they haven't played the game before. These other people have, and they're judging it on an objective spectrum. They're going to get outsmarted, outplayed, outwitted, outlasted, etc. Here, it's more subjective, right? There's a panel that's actually determining who goes home and who stays. Theoretically, these judges could say, hey, for example, Sam, we know you can do better work than what you're putting out in front of us right now. We're going to judge you with a harder rubric than we might new contestants. Are they going to do that? I have no idea. But this is something that could possibly balance the scales a bit in comparison to the way other shows have used this format.
And I think you've seen that before. I mean, one of the things about Top Chef is, yeah, this is like the first, like, this is Top Chef Micronesia. Like, this is the first time that we are blending, you know, an even split of returning chef testants and new chef testants. But it's not the first time that chef testants have returned in seasons that are mostly dominated by new chef testants. Yeah. And we have seen in I don't know about all of those cases. I don't have the quick recall on that, but certainly, like, you think about Top Chef Seattle and CJ is there for 5 seconds, you know, it, like, people who should come into this, you know, with sort of like a Titanic edge, you would think, can go down really fast for all the reasons that Mike has said. And it's happened before on the show. So I don't mind that format for Top Chef. Maybe the thing that I do mind is that, like, I don't remember most of these people, and there certainly had to have been a better rate than what we got.
Yeah, we'll definitely run down the returnees. Kurt, what are your thoughts on this kind of season format?
Well, I like the way, and we'll get to kind of how the initial challenge was set up. But we even did see, I believe that it was Emily who was saying, they're all standing off to the side. The newbies are standing off to the side watching the returnees do the thing. And she's like, you know what? This is actually kind of good that we get to see this. They are as flustered and running around like chickens with their heads cut off and then not using the heads in dishes. And this is actually kind of good to see that they're just as panicked and chaotic as we are. I think as we get down the road, I think you're going to see that maybe some of that sense memory is going to kick in for the returnees, and you might see a little bit of an edge when they and the newbies kind of are competing head to head in the same sort of challenge. But so I expect they're going to have some sort of a little bit of an edge in the learning curve, but I don't think it's necessarily going to be as cut and dry, no pun intended, as we potentially think.
Well, Josh, and you brought up season 10, which I'll now refer to as Top Chef Guatemala, because there was a mix of returnees and original players and CJ and CJ's elimination. And if you'll recall, a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing, because in that challenge that eliminated CJ, he thought, Tom, well, I just thought, you know, maybe if you got a pickle, why don't you put it on a burger? So CJ's trying to get inside Tom's head what he knows about Tom from previous experiences. And that actually leads him down the road that gets him eliminated. So sometimes that experience can actually be a hindrance. And we saw it a little bit in this episode with John. Your reputation does precede you, and it's a matter of what you do with that reputation and what the expectations are, as you pointed out, Mike. So I do think that this format has some strengths and some weaknesses. And I think that it really does, in a lot of ways, revolve or resolve itself based around how the quality of the chef testants that return. In season 10, we had CJ, we had Stefan, and
don't
we
say
had
the
Josie.
Name, dude. Oh, you said it.
I did. I'm not going to say it three times because I don't want her to show up with a headband on behind me like, hey, how's it going?
Blair.
Yeah, no. But anyway, we had those three returnees. And I got to say, in preparation for this season, knowing that it was a half and half season, Mike and myself, I know, engaged in some Top Chef rewatching. And I rewatched actually every season except poor Shirley Chung's of all the returnee seasons.
which I rewatched to fill in the blanks there.
Yeah.
And how many Scream Queens rewatches did you fit into this?
0%, Josh. I did none of that. Thank you. But that's funny. I think, all right. How many times did you watch Westworld this year, Josh?
I mean, a lot.
Okay. So fair enough. Yes, enough that your reveries are coming back to you.
So we
did a rewatch, and in some cases it was very necessary. We're seeing a lot of the comments that have already been tweeted or posted on Facebook or on our show pages are just sent to us about these returnees, and there are a lot of question marks about some of them. So, guys, let's get right into this. Mike, you mentioned that you did watch Shirley's season, which I believe was New Orleans. Why don't you give us a summary of Shirley or your impressions of her from rewatching her season?
Sure. So Shirley is a huge front runner in New Orleans. I think a lot of people remember New Orleans right now as the season that Nick stole from Nina. Kurt, you probably
oh, it's my favorite season
right now.
That's right.
But I think what a lot of people forget is that for a while, it was pretty much like the Nina and Shirley horse race. Shirley, I think, has won like four quick fires and like three elimination challenges. She was only in the bottom once, and the only reason why she was eliminated is because they had the finale in Hawaii, and for their last challenge, they cooked in an outdoor setting, and it happened to rain openly on them. They had no sort of cover, and as a result, some of Shirley's food got some water in it. We all know that cooking has a certain amount of science to it, and as a result, the chemical balance of some of her dishes got thrown off a tad. I think one of her dishes was too sweet, and so she was eliminated as a result. But I was super excited to have her come in here as a chef and also as a personality. She is very bubbly, very energetic, very talkative. That resonates a lot for me personally. So as someone who I felt like was very robbed in her original season, I feel like this type of season was perfect for her.
Josh, did you know what that episode was called when she was eliminated? It was called Raindrops Keep Falling on My Bread. That was the episode title. Hey, I didn't write it. It was the episode title. Yeah,
that's
so
pretty good.
Shirley is hilarious. I love that she referred to herself in this episode by her first and last name. I'm saying, Shirley Chung, what are you doing here? So that was really funny.
She's fun. She's got a good personality. I remember her being a good cook. She was certainly hanging into her season for a very good little while there. So great to see her back. No complaints about a Shirley return.
Right. Rather than me droning on about some of these other returnees, Mike, do you have any hot takes on any of the other ones that you went back and checked out?
Yeah, so I watched season 2, so I can talk about Sam. First, this might be a hot take, but I think Sam looks better now than he did back then. I think, for me...
My wife agrees with you, Mike.
For me, it might be the hair. I think I'm just not into that, like, pseudo-shoulder-length type of greasy mop that he was wearing in season 2. Though there were a lot of interesting comments in season 2 throughout all the challenges about how, you know how sometimes they open up like the food stalls to the public for them to vote on which is the best one? Sam often got into the top just because everyone was obsessed with him and always went to his food no matter how good it was. Sam was pretty good. I know, I think you made a note about this, Antonio, that like he has this weird habit of like almost whispering his dishes sensually.
Yes.
As a description, which would make things that. Super interesting. But I think he was like solid. I could definitely, I remember when I watched the season back in the day that I thought he was pretty robbed as well. The Alain Marcel final is not the best to watch. I think that's sort of like, oh, how did we end up with these two at the end of the day? So I think his return is a little long. I'm surprised he didn't come back for All Stars in the first place, but I could see him coming back. I also recently finished season 7. I feel like people want us to talk about Amanda because I know you were mentioning before, Antonio, there are a lot of question marks, a lot of hers. She is the Anne Veal. Of Top Chef 14. We'll see how many eggs she ends up cooking, unlike Brooke. Amanda is someone who I feel like from a cooking perspective is sort of blasé. She only was in like the top of a couple challenges. Otherwise, she was in the bottom. She, if people might not remember, there was a challenge where they had to serve food to a cafeteria full of elementary school kids, and she decided to make a dish infused with alcohol, which people were really not happy about. Amanda was definitely more of a personality. She had these very like dry, sardonic confessionals. She has this really crazy backstory of being like a former drug addict before she started cooking. I believe at the time she was on Top Chef, she was only like 26. She'd only been cooking for a few years, so she was very much, you know, highly doubted by her competitors, especially when you have people like Angelo on that season, who is like the smuggiest of all smug that ever did smug. And she's coming back here, but now we have the additional stipulation of her being out of the kitchen for essentially a couple of years because of this back injury, which I don't know if she had gained some momentum over these seasons that would have maybe made her a dark horse in this competition. Her being out due to injury and really being out of the kitchen for so long might have squelched those odds.
That's kind of a compelling story. You know, I mean, I don't remember Amanda at all. I have no recollection of this human being. But I like the idea of somebody who's not just been out of Top Chef for a while and is returning to the game, but has been out of the kitchen, you know, entirely for, you know, however long it's been to recover from this injury, and is now hopping back in like the most intense way you could possibly reintegrate yourself to your old world. So I feel like that's compelling. Like, that could be a compelling arc, whether it was like a long-term Amanda does really well out here, or if it's like a really fast flash in the pan and she's gone. So I like the story for her, at least, even if I could not have picked her out in a lineup.
Nice work on that flash in the pan there, Josh.
Well, I find it funny that when they bring in the returning contestants and they're kind of, you know, here are some familiar faces, Amanda's the first person to walk in. And I'm wondering if all the people are lined up, like, if they see Amanda walk in and they're wondering, oh, okay, 8 new contestants. And then as the people get a little bit more progressively well-known or familiar as they continue entering the you know, kitchen stadium, if I'm mixing shows up. but I'd say, even though I kind of, you know, clear my buffer after each season and I don't really remember a whole lot of folks, a lot of these people did seem familiar to me. I'd say the two that didn't were John and Amanda, but I feel that I do know John like a lot more coming out of the first episode, just because obviously he was at the center of a lot. Amanda didn't have a huge edit other than the fact that she was kind of one of the judges' favorites and in her initial round of cooking. And she had like the backstory again about how she's been out of cooking for a few years. So I am hoping that we get a little bit more of her on the TV just for us who maybe don't remember her to get her a little more gentle reminder.
No, she needs to be, she needs to be a man for Kurt to remember who she was.
a forgettable white person.
Yes. Kurt remembers the people that everyone else forgets. So it's fine. Well, somebody's got to look out for those people.
I did say maybe I did obviously remember then I think Katsuji. He was the one that I was actually looking forward to the most, because I think that there was, he was kind of like one of the our favorites when we first started podcasting about Top Chef. And he hasn't you know, walked completely away from overuse of ingredients in his cooking. So I'm happy to see that there's some things that are a constant.
Yeah, you can't change your spots. Although you can apparently between seasons become quite the dandy, which Katsuji seems to have done. So good on him for doing that. I don't remember this sartorial splendor in previous Katsuji appearances. So this is he's got a bow tie forever, a chicken in every pot and a bow tie for every competition. This is an interesting design by Katsuji here.
He's going to look good. He saw himself on TV. He's like, I know what I needed last time. If I could go back and fix anything about my Top Chef experience,
it has
more
to be
bow
my
ties. and very colorful bow ties. Yeah.
Yeah. So that will be good. Katsuji is a very memorable character. If you remember in Top Chef Boston, they went to the cranberry bog, and the challenge was to run back and forth into the cranberry bog and get as many cranberries as you could to fill up your box. And by the end of it, Katsuji was on the ground in his waders like a caterpillar trying to slide out, just exhausted. So he's always been a very funny guy. It remains to be seen whether he can refine his style and really focus, because I think when he does, there is something pretty compelling there in terms of what he does, the kind of food he cooks, the mix of flavors that he brings to the table. So he's an interesting returnee, but also a character. He's wondering if he's getting subtitles this season. It looks like we're going to get some Katsuji subtitles.
I love those meta moments. And in my binge of RuPaul's Drag Race in the time between Top Chef seasons, they are another show that really embraces those meta moments as well, where it seems like the fourth wall just shatters when they start addressing camera. And here in this episode, you have like the sound effects of the person literally typing on the screen as the subtitles go in. So I hope they do more of that to really make fun of Top Chef, considering that we are 14 seasons in. There's a lot of tropes that have become well-worn, so I hope the show at least embraces those.
Yeah, it's funny because you mentioned the tropes that have become well-worn, and Josh, you mentioned the idea of the compelling story of Amanda maybe not having cooked for a while and then coming back. That's actually been something, I think, in All Stars, for example. Dale Levitsky had, I think, either in his first season or in All Stars, he said, this helped me rediscover my love for cooking. I hadn't cooked in a while. And then Steven from season one also had gone into more front of house, sommelier type stuff and hadn't really cooked in a while. And it didn't end well for those two on All Stars. So it will be interesting to see how this plays out for Amanda, because she's in the top in the returnees quickfire. So she seems to have done well right from the jump. She does have a different look too. She didn't have bangs her first season, so I think that adds to it. It's not just Sam who has changed the hair, Mike. Sam was a big hot topic of discussion in a lot of the tweets we got. Sharon Tharp concurred with Josh, your lovely wife, as well as you, Mike, in that perhaps Sam got even hotter. I don't know how you can get hotter than already being one of people's sexiest men alive, but here we are. So that's what Sam brings to the table. Yeah, he has that quiet intensity. Speaking of returnees with tropes and stories that are to be told about not cooking, we have Casey back for her third time. Casey was on season three, got better as the season went on, and then she was on All Stars. Kurt, what's your take on Casey?
I'm a fan of Casey. I like that this is kind of a first timers versus second chances versus Casey. and she seems very kind of self-deprecating. The fact that she was voicing, is she a competition whore? Is she a TV whore? She doesn't really care, but she's just kind of trying to go out there and get things done. She seemed a little bit all over the place in the first episode. I was again, I think like Emily was commenting on the returnees, they weren't necessarily as poised or ready for the chaos as I necessarily had thought they would be. And Casey kind of gave voice to that. But when I saw that she was going to be among the returnees, I was happy. Something nice to enjoy on my TV.
I mean, but why a third timer? And I guess this speaks to the larger question of why this group of people in general, because I think from what we just addressed, there's sort of range the gamut of, oh, awesome, to, okay, why? Mm-hmm. And you have to wonder, I mean, I think when the cast list first came out, I know a lot of people were reaching out to us saying, like, hey, why was no one from this most recent season on? Why was, you know, insert person here not on this season? I think it really comes down to availability. And obviously, that comes into effect with all returning player seasons. But I feel like on Top Chef, where you essentially create a cooking career that includes, in some cases, opening multiple restaurants from across the country, you can't really drop everything and hop onto the show anytime that you want to. So something tells me, and this is like my own tinfoil, ready-made Gladware hat that I'm making right now, maybe there was a big list of people that they were reaching out to. A lot of them said no. And Casey, for example, might have been someone who was more near the bottom on the list that they had to snag.
Well, I think that's a good point. I mean, this isn't like Survivor, where people can just kind of drop their acting, bartending, pharmaceutical sales career at the drop of a hat and step away for, you know, a couple months to do this. This is you're asking people who have established careers who, unlike, I think, if you look at, Celebrity Apprentice, where they're not necessarily all staying in the same place. You kind of get the impression that they have their meetings, but then they get to kind of go home or what have you, do things on the downtime. But this is something where they're taking time away from their restaurants and their careers and their livelihoods to you know, spend time doing this. So I think it's a mix of, you know, where were the people who were maybe a little bit higher up in the list, were they not able to make it? And, you know, were the people who, you know, at what point did you get to the where people were able to actually step away and join?
Yeah. And I mean, that's great news for like all the people who they couldn't get, like the Gregories of the world or the Dougies of the world, that if they were having enough success that they don't need to come back to Top Chef. That's fantastic for them. But it sucks for us. I wish them nothing but the worst so that they have to return to Top Chef and entertain me on television.
There's also the possibility they're saving some people for a full All-Star season. And that is not necessarily the case, but there is also that possibility that Top Chef would want to go with the full All-Stars and would want to only have two time returnees at that point. And so that the character maybe is as important, or the memories are as important as the availability or the talent. I think all these people are obviously phenomenally talented. Casey herself got better as her season went on. And in All-Stars, she really only went out because the Black Hammer, Antonia, was in charge of cooking chicken feet for Casey in this nightmare dim sum challenge, if you'll recall, where the diners were really losing their minds and Tom had to go back in the kitchen and yell at everyone because of how slow the service was. Casey was in the front of house, was not even preparing her own dish, and went home for something essentially Antonia did or did not do in terms of the preparation of Casey's dish. So maybe they felt like she got a raw deal by cooking with those raw feet. I'm not sure, but that might be part of it. She also said in her spare time, she opens restaurants. So if she's, you know, constantly doing that, maybe she's either uber successful or not successful, but either way, she's there. Sam apparently has just had the rock star life. Speaking of rock star life, Sheldon came back. Sheldon is back, and Sheldon's been hanging out with that weird looking old woman that is on The Voice, whatever her name is.
The guy from Aerosmith, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. That lady. Yeah. Yeah. That lady.
I think that was Steven Tyler, right?
Yes. Yeah, Stephanie Tyler. Yeah. So Sheldon's been hanging out with rock stars. He's been living the good life in Hawaii. He said Top Chef has made his life. Anybody really, really stoked to see Sheldon back? I like this guy. He's a menahune.
Yeah, stoked to see Sheldon. Love Sheldon. Was a great personality on his season. Was a really, you know, clearly a great chef. He seemed really out of his comfort zone in this episode. I don't know if I'm alone in feeling that way, but he looked like a fish out of water. Like, talk about that idea of these people being away from Top Chef for so many years, meaning they don't have as much of an edge returning to the game as you might think for another reality game. Sheldon, to me, of all the returning chef testants, looked the most out of his element, and the lack of, like, not to get into the edit of it all and everything, but like the lack of attention on him, the lack of screen time on a character like Sheldon, who should be a pretty big deal, has me worried for Sheldon's long-term prospects.
He definitely seemed like a mahi out of water there. And I think it might also come from a personality thing. I mean, Sheldon, the reason why we love him is because he's so laid back. He's so Shaka Bra, but Top Chef is anything but Shaka Bra, where it's saying, okay, you need to get this dish done in half an hour. Here are your ingredients. You need to come up with a concept and execution right here, right now. Everybody run around the kitchen. I'm assuming that's not the way Sheldon cooks whatsoever. So between being away from Top Chef and then having to get back into a setting where you're working totally in opposition with your usual work ethic, I can imagine it's a little tough to get things started again.
Yeah, and I keep going back to this this idea of, like, do returnees have an advantage here? And I think, again, it's not like something like Survivor or Big Brother, where you go into a game that's completely different from anything you experience in the outside world. You have no idea how you would react in this environment. You have to kind of develop and implement strategies that aren't things that you do on a day-to-day basis. Here on Top Chef, this is, you know, yes, it's kind of, you know, intensified and pressure cookered and under a time limit, but still, everybody who is a contestant here is a chef of some sort. And it is potentially, you know, this idea that, you know, people who have been away longer may have maybe stepped up a little bit in their careers. They're a little bit more used to being in control. And, you know, they now are back in a situation where they have a lack of control. They might actually be flustered more than the newbies who are actually come into this maybe a little bit more fresh and flexible. So I'm really interested to see at the end of the day whether or not we have more returnees or newbies at the very end of the game.
I think that syncs up well. It's a really good point, Kurt, that is well taken here. I think that syncs up well with the two that we really haven't talked about, which at least from this episode were the top and the bottom, the best and worst of the returning chefs. And that is Brooke and John. Starting first with Brooke, to your point, Kurt, Brooke runs her own restaurant. She did so on her season. She's as much a business person as a chef in her season. She expressed a lot of regret for not being in the kitchen as much as she would like to be, that there's a lot more business that she does in terms of cooking, and yet she was incredibly talented. She made it all the way to the finals on her season. She only lost to Kristen Kish in that really weird live to tape finale, which was the 10th anniversary with all the returning people there in the crowd, and there were all these time limits, and it was clear that Kristen was going to win because the number of challenges needed to win, the time period of the episode, and it was just kind of a mess. And that whole season was a course correct because of what happened with She Who Must Not Be Named getting Kristen eliminated. So it didn't feel like the worst, most unfair result, unless you were Team Brooke, in which case it really did. So I, for one, am really, really happy to see Brooke back. She's super, super talented. She never really went through on her season a gap where she was in the bottom consistently or missing out consistently. But her biggest struggles were related to missing her family, feeling like she needed to be at her business, having that be a distraction and not really having her head be always in the challenges because of that. And it seems pretty clear that's the story we're going to get a little bit on this season with Brooke.
Exactly. We saw a lot of her kind of questioning, should I have come back in this initial episode, and not leaning too much into the, you know, the season preview we got. There seems to be kind of more of that as you continue forward. But I'd say for her, it's less of a confidence in her cooking, and seems like more, is this the kind of the what she needs to be doing emotionally right now? Is this the right place for her to be? Seems to be kind of the story we're going to get from Brooke in season 14.
Is she here for the right reasons?
She's not here to make friends. Oh, wait, I think that's Emily.
I don't know. I love that about Brooke, and I loved that about Brooke in her first season. Like, I think that, like, that emotional drama that comes from her, I think that that's pretty good. Brooke's one of my favorite Top Chef contestants of all time, so I'm very, very psyched to see her. I mean, you mentioned before, Antonio, about, like, no one being that mad that Kristen Kish wins over Brooke, and I love Kristen Kish. Do not get me wrong. I think she is phenomenal, but I was hard rooting for Brooke in that head-to-head because you know how I feel about Last Chance Kitchen, and I don't like the idea of validating Last Chance Kitchen with a win, and of course that's how it ends up happening, that Kristen Kish battles her way back from LCK and wins the whole season, and Brooke is unfortunately in second place after really kicking some butt down the stretch. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see if Brooke can pull it out this time. She, you know, is obviously off to a good start here in this first episode, but probably at least in terms of the returning chef contestants, there's no one I'm rooting for more than Brooke.
That's great. I'm pretty much on the same team as you, and I'm a big fan of Brooke, and I hope she does really well. I hope this season is not something that she looks back on with regret, and I hope there are a lot of very memorable dishes like there were in this episode from Brooke. She's a fantastic chef, and we can make jokes about, you know, what about this person? I don't even remember their season, or maybe they're brought back more for a character. Brooke is probably among the most talented, if not the most talented person returning here, and it's great to see her get another shot because I think it elevates the level of the competition significantly.
Absolutely. And I guess moving over to John a bit, I know Antonio, in our talk before coming on here, you had a little bit of a hot take on John because I think the vast majority remembered him as the asshole of Top Chef Seattle, and so we were all a little surprised slash a little chagrined to see him back. But from what you told us, you're a little bit of a different mind after rewatching Seattle.
Yeah, he has this rep coming in, right? He's the most hated chef in Dallas. He's this horrible guy. And he's definitely a little pretentious and luxury, and he needs attention, and he wants to be singled out and patted on the back, and he wants to be taken seriously and all that. There's a lot of insecurity there. But, I mean, that was a season with She Who Must Not Be Named and Stefan, who also have character issues that people have problems with. And people grow to like Stefan, and I think that a lot of his issues, he has a really good heart. It comes up on season. People say that a lot of the time, but I just don't think that John is even close to among the most abrasive contestants we've ever seen on Top Chef. Need I mention Aaron, if you guys remember that D-bag, and the way he came off in the edit. We've had other contestants that also come off really abrasive and really aggressive. John's a guy that just gets under people's skin by making comments like he made to Brooke when he first walked in. He said, oh, look, it's the woman who never got voted out. She made it all the way to the finals. And and lost. You know, he's just immediately getting under his skin without really necessarily meaning to. And he has a bad rep for that reason. But I think he's really not that bad. The funny thing to me about John, though, he goes home on his season in a challenge where he did not finish at the bottom. There was a dish of his that there's a dish in that competition by Lizzie that was way, way worse. It just so happened that that challenge was one where they decided that the two people on the bottom were going to compete in a cook-off against each other. It was the Memorable Moments Challenge from season 10, where they each had to cook a dish that was the most memorable from a previous season. The trick was, at the end, the bottom two people had to cook the memorable dish from that current season, which was CJ's pickle burger. So they had to compete in a burger cook-off. John never should have been in that cook-off. His dish was not the worst, but he ended up in that cook-off, and he regretted not stealing all the pickles in the final two cook-off so that Lizzie couldn't have a pickle for her pickle burger. He was like, I could have just taken that jar of pickles and gone home, but I played. He wanted credit for not being an asshole. So my thought was, if he comes into this season looking to overcorrect, that could be a really fun thing. But it looks like he's actually trying to be a decent guy here in this season. Yeah. So if you don't bring John back to be that character, let's hope we get a lot of good food from John.
Yeah, we even see, you know, Katsuji's trying to egg John on to get under Gerald's skin prior to their sudden death quickfire. And he's like, no, that's not how I am anymore. I'm a kinder and gentler John. So I'm interested in seeing where he goes from here.
Yeah, I don't know why I keep bringing up RuPaul's Drag Race here, but they just had their All-Star season, and there was someone who was in a very similar place. They were very negatively received on their previous season. And so coming in, they said, all right, I'm going to course correct here. I'm going to try to not be a bitch, essentially, for the entire season. That act lasted for 2 episodes, and then they got completely vilified and turned back into an asshole again. So maybe it's what I've seen recently on reality television, but I know Michael Clark asked us, you know, how long will John stick to his plan to avoid trying to get into his competitors' heads? I'm going to give it, like, maybe 3 or 4 episodes. I mean, when the pressure of competition gets to you, you might start resorting to old habits. I could very well see John doing this again.
Our fearless leader, Rob Sesternino, likes to say that Survivor reveals your true self. And I feel like Top Chef does a similar thing. And I think John Tizar is a bit of a dick. And I think that will manifest itself sooner rather than later.
We'll see. I think the jury is out for me on that. Yeah. I'm not saying that that's not true. I think he's... I just think he tries to... he wants to make the last point, or he wants to be heard. And I think that comes off in a very abrasive way certain times, but I'm not sure he's out to actually wound or be a jerk sometimes. Yeah. We'll see how it plays out.
But I think that kind of energy, you know, coming into a competition that's as fierce as something like this with, I have to make my declarative statement on my story. Like, that can either be a great thing that really propels you towards success, or it can be an albatross. Mm-hmm. He strikes me as the kind of person where that kind of pressure is more albatross than, like, moment of greatness. Like, this is your time to really show yourself. I'd love to be proved wrong, because that would be a very compelling narrative to watch over the course of the season, because I'd be very surprised at that. But you've watched the season so much more recently than I have, Antonio, but my recollection of him is just being abrasive. And I think that's like an internal trait with this guy. It strikes me. And I don't know how long you can veer away from your true self in this kitchen. So, hopes are low, expectations are low, but it'd be cool to see some sort of turn.
Expectations are as low as Annie's temperature on her oven.
And we'll get into these new contestants right now. We'll see if a 58-year-old leopard who looks maybe 42 can change his spots. We'll see how this plays out with John.
That's insane. He's 59 years old, this guy?
Yeah, and he apparently was a heavy drug user in the 80s, according to his previous season. So he wears it real well.
Beautiful 59-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. I thought he had a stressful job.
This
so
guy
he
is
looks
the, he's
good.
The Charles Grodin of Top Chef. You would never know. You would never know that he is as old as he truly is. He's like eternally like 50.
Do you think he's been to Dinosaur World?
Dinosaur World.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I will go on record as saying I'm really happy with even all eight of the returnees. I think they each bring something different to the table.
True.
I do think in a mixed fans versus favorites, if you want to call it kind of season like that, if you bring in the 8 best chefs who haven't won Top Chef, it's not fair. I think you need a mix of 8 people. some of whom have been out the game for a little while, some of whom are older, some of whom are more characters than necessarily memorable for their performances, some of whom maybe got robbed. I think it's actually a really good mix, and I think it should produce not only compelling television, but some really good food to see on this season. So I'm not just cautiously optimistic, I'm very optimistic about the eight that were brought back, now that I've seen them, especially in action here on this season. But what about the eight new contestants? I don't know the best way to go through these. They were the first ones to participate in the quick fire. We saw them come out with no knowledge of the fact that they were being watched. There's only eight of them. These are our only eight new contestants. Kurt, who jumped out immediately to you as somebody who you've got your eye on?
Oh, Jim.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Sounds like we have a lot of Jim fans in the house.
The returnees were Jim fans. I think, you know, at least three of them were saying, especially Casey, were saying, oh, I just want to pick him up and hug him. I mean, he's, you know, came off as very endearing. I think he is the Dougie of this season?
Josh?
Oh, is he the Dougie of the season? Meaning, like, he's just the one that, like, we unanimously love.
Yes.
He's certainly off to a great so far. Start.
Well, I think, Dougie, though, like, it gained like a few episodes for us to really get to know him, though, right? I feel like this is a guy who really made a big first impression. I mean, move over Zooey Deschanel. This guy, in my opinion, is the definition of adorkable.
Yeah, do you think he's a big fan of our podcast at post-show recaps, Josh?
Is that a possibility that Jim Smith is into the PSRs?
You tell me he doesn't watch Westworld, Josh?
He probably watches Westworld, this guy.
Well, we know he watches he's watched all the Star Trek episodes. He's a huge Buffy nerd. I can see him being into Westworld.
Yeah.
So good chance. When he, not to skip ahead to like the competitions and stuff, but when he won the quick fire, when he won his side of things, and Padma announces, and the winning plate is Jim's. Emily and I thought that she was saying that his name was Jim's. Like, everyone refers to Jim as Jim's. And there's just an S on there at the end. And I was starting to get very excited at the prospect of just, like, adding an S onto the last name of all of these contestants. It's Sheldon's. Sheldon's is back. Katsuji's is here. That's neither here nor there. I just thought it was a really great moment.
What about BJ's?
Mike, you sounded an awful lot like
BJ's
Kurt there.
BJ's here as well. He is.
Yeah, I can throw my voice very effectively to other people.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Jim Smith, he's the
executive chef of the state of Alabama.
Which, in he's BFFs with the Gov of Alabama, which I encourage you, if you don't know anything about the governor of Alabama and his recent dalliances, to Google, because I don't know what Jim Smith may or may not know about some of the things that the governor of Alabama has been getting into, but Jim Smith could probably tell some stories, and that's all I'll say about that.
He's also from Troy, Alabama, which is only noteworthy because that is also the hometown of one Bobby John Drinkard from Survivor, so this town is breeding very interesting reality TV characters.
Wasn't
he
on Top Chef
Guatemala?
Bobby John
has ever eaten at Jim's restaurant?
If they don't serve Balut, then I think he's good.
Yeah, so I don't know. Jim Smith does not sound like a real name to me. That's my only hot take, is this guy's too good to be true. There's something hiding behind that Jim Smith.
Maybe he's an alien, and he adopted the name Jim Smith and tried to blend into the modern nerd community.
I can't wait to see that come out. Like, can you hand me that electronic device used for mixing? Yeah, and just doesn't know the names of devices or whatever in the kitchen. I don't know. He did some interesting flavor profiles there, so maybe the alien thing is tracking. He also is a big Star Trek fan, so who knows? Yeah,
and if Instagram is a valid source of information, I believe he's friends with Chef Wesley from last season.
Oh,
I came across
Pacino.
Instagram feed. I following Chef Wesley, and there was I think they were at a premiere viewing party together. Like, apparently, Jim was there rooting on Wesley in his premiere episode, and now they're kind of returning the favor. So they do know each other. He's very familiar with the Top Chef.
I'm a fan of Jim. He reminded me of Kevin Costner in JFK mixed with maybe like a Rick Moranis. So that's my hot take on Jim. I don't know. There's something there. There's a there. He's returning chef.
If Minkus grew up and moved to Alabama and became an incredible chef.
I love that spinoff idea.
Boy meets
Minkus
top
in,
chef.
Minkus yeah. in the kitchen. Yeah. Someone's in the kitchen with Minkus.
Someone in the kitchen I know.
All right, so who else, guys? Who else jumped out from this first episode? Memorable from the new contestant.
If we're pitting newbies and veterans against each other, which they're sort of loosely doing here, but I have a feeling that barrier is going to break down, Emily is definitely the most vocal of the fans at this point. For some reason, the only image I got of her in her confessionals was a nasty version of Abby Jacobson from Broad City. Maybe it's the bangs, but that's all I saw of her. I mean, she cooked pretty good food. I mean, she cooked two dishes, and her chicken wing, one of them, ended up being at the top. So she very nearly won. But, I mean, she talked about how she had gotten fired from several places because of her attitude. I know that we had a question from Becky in the Rob as a Podcast patron group of how long before Emily completely explodes and who ignites her first, fellow contestants or a judge's comment. We've obviously seen through the years a number of contestants get not only pissed off at each other, but pissed off at the judges. She might be the leading content for someone to argue, or leading contestant for someone to argue with the judges this season.
Yeah, she already dismissed the judges and said, enough talking. That's it. Yeah, she was done talking to those judges immediately. She presents a very interesting profile. She's getting a lot of TV time, and she's getting it as a kind of a zero F's given guest who doesn't want any part of any part of these returnees. And
oh, yeah, not talking to them at all.
Yeah, doesn't want to talk to him. I think that contrasts interestingly to one of my personal favorites from this episode, Sylvia Barbon from Italy, currently living in Brooklyn. You'll recall her from the quick fire, cooking fresh pasta in 30 minutes and doing a very good job. She's one of my favorites. Yeah. She does not seem to be oppositional to some of these returning chefs at all. In fact, when she saw Sam walk into the room and when she later talked about Sam walking into the room, off came the jacket.
I didn't quite catch that, but that
Top Chef thirst is definitely in key here for the season.
Yeah. So are anybody shipping Sylvia and Sam? What would their name be, Mike?
Oh, God.
Sylvum?
Sylvium. Sylvium sounds like a drug you take to go to sleep at night.
Samvia.
So I'm a big fan of Sylvia. Anybody else jumping out to you guys before we get into who was top and who was bottom in this first quickfire?
I also like Sylvia, and also realized after Emily, my wife, pointed it out to me that her restaurant, Aita, is featured on the food delivery service called Caviar, which I waste so much money on. I waste way too much money on this app where it gets you all the great restaurants get delivered right to your doorstep. And I've never gotten delivery from her restaurant before, but man, am I tempted because it's on there and it does look good. And now I am a big fan of hers on the show as well.
Yeah,
so I may report back. How about that? I'll do some homework.
Yeah, normally I don't get like drawn or to the contestants who are kind of the zero F's given. I'm not here to make friends. But in a season where everybody seems really pleasant and upbeat, maybe John is a question mark on that. In terms of like the upbeat side, he's kind of more like, you know, matter of fact, get to work. But in terms of like everybody seems very pleasant, I actually like the fact that there's an Emily on here. I'm hoping that she sticks around. I don't necessarily want her to start warming up to people. I like that she's on my TV.
As long, I agree with you, but as long as we're not getting another, I know you brought up Erin before, where it's like every episode we're going to her saying something negative. And this might tie into someone else who stuck out to me, which is Jamie, which is, I guess, is going to be our big bad boy of the season. Mr. I 75% covered in tattoos because I don't want to work for corporate chefdom. He very nearly went into the sudden death quickfire because he ends up burning his vegetables. I know he like owns what, like three, BJ is the one who owns three restaurants, but he's like, he has like a place in New York, he has a place in the Carolinas, so he seems like he has a high pedigree, but it'll be interesting to see. You know, it's very clear, I think he was walking in here with an attitude, and I'll be interested to see whether he gets his butt checked sooner rather than later, if he hasn't already with the vegetables.
He comes in, as you say, with a very good pedigree, and he was in the process, I think, of making what would have been a really good dish, but he did burn the vegetables, and sometimes it takes time to get adjusted to the clock in the Top Chef kitchen, especially for somebody who is coming in with a very distinct style or with a lot of classical training. You have to be improvisational. All these skills are required with the chef. This quickfire was set up to test those skills. He was really good at breaking down the chicken in the quickfire. Yeah. Another of the new contestants, I think, presented much differently, and that is not Sylvia, it's Silva, the Haitian chef who resides currently in Philadelphia. Silva was notable for his entire calm throughout the challenge. He was very calm, just went about his business very methodically, presented very differently, I think, and showed a skill in that regard that may serve him well in this season of Top Chef and in the Top Chef kitchen, in that he was very calm when he went about his business. So I that stood out to me as well. I think he has a good shot here to really cook some good food as the season goes on, if he's able to keep that even keel throughout.
So if Silva is the Haitian, does that mean that nobody can cook when he walks into the kitchen?
Yeah, Silva robs everyone of their ability to cook, and also wipes their minds after Silva leaves the kitchen.
Oh, boy, gosh.
These references, Jim Smith just got that joke, so we're fine.
Yeah, that's the audience I'm playing to right now.
Good audience.
Speaking of Smith, go ahead, Josh.
Well, I was going to say, I'm actually interested in seeing more from Annie, our stage fright chef testant. That was the one where... where it was Emily told them to the judges to, okay, let's stop talking. I need to cook. The judges kind of saw that Annie needed them to stop talking. So we're just going to let you do your stuff here. I was getting kind of a Grayson vibe from Annie, minus the I know what I'm doing attitude of Grayson. There's just something about her that I'm hope. I don't know. Can we kind of talked about that, this in Top Chef in the past, where story can go one of two ways. And for example, with Annie, it's either this is something that she's going to get over and where she's going to gain confidence over the next couple episodes, or it's going to crash and burn really quickly and just progressively get worse. And we're probably not going to see her past week three. So I'm wondering which of those two routes we're going to go with Annie.
I think that's right. That's exactly my take. I want to see a lot more of Chef Annie, because she's from Louisville, or currently has a restaurant in Louisville, Kentucky, near where I reside, not far from where I reside in Kentucky. So I'm looking forward to seeing her on this season. I hope she gets a good run. The last great Louisville chef was Chef Ed on Top Chef, and he had a pretty solid run on Top Chef, and I always wanted to see him again. So I'm hoping Annie can continue the tradition that Edward Lee started. So I hope that this is, as you're saying, kind of growing pains or a rough start, but she's going to settle into her own and cook really good food as long as she's on the screen. What about the mascot of Portland, the guy who just looks like Portland from Central Casting? Like, if you were going to put Portland on a billboard, it would be BJ Smith, who owns high-end barbecue, three restaurants in Portland. Anybody have any observations about Chef BJ? Yes, go ahead, Josh.
He's this season's Jeremy, right? Like, this is he's like that alpha dad type who, Tom Colicchio just freaking loves, like worships that type of chef testant. Like, I feel like we'll be seeing a lot of BJ on Top Chef this season.
Yeah. I'm just going to leave that right there.
Yep, I waited. I wanted to make sure
name.
That
nobody was going to film it. What do you want?
Well, I think Antonio and I were both looking at Mike for the next follow-up comment.
Yep, exactly. So we're going to be careful with that.
Silva stole my powers. I can't go full bloom.
Half bloom.
Well, I think that inures to the benefit of everyone on this season. The only other chef we really haven't touched on at all, unfortunately, is the chef who went home in this episode, Gerald Sombright. Gerald was on the bottom of the quick fire. Gerald just did not seem to adjust to what was happening in the competition on this day. It seemed like Gerald just had a really bad 2 days on Top Chef. And unfortunately, it was right at the beginning of the competition, and it was in a position where there really wasn't anywhere to hide. And Gerald, unfortunately, is the chef who goes home in this episode. I'm really disappointed. Not only did we hear a lot of Gerald's tough story, the things that's gone on, the fact that he's essentially lived in his car and he's been through a lot and had this rough background, which was, to me, making it clear that he was going to get eliminated in this episode. But it's just somebody who I feel like we didn't get to see anything from Gerald, and we're going to get taught. We're going to get Last Chance Kitchen. So maybe the chef that he competes against, we'll see a little more of their food, and then he'll beat them in Last Chance Kitchen, and we'll see a little more of Chef Gerald. But I was very disappointed that Chef Gerald went home in this episode. I just feel like we didn't see what this guy really could bring to the table, and it's unfortunate.
Well, at least they gave him a chance to kind of calm his nerves and cook in a nice reserved fashion in the soothing setting of a plantation.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
It was awkward.
Yeah, and I mean, it was awkward for everybody. And it was not only just awkward, but the way it was presented. I think that it's a really difficult deal to strike. We got a lot of questions and feedback about that. We'll get to that when we get into that final cook-off. Anything else from the quick fire? As we said, the top from the newbies here, the best kind of dishes from the top were Silva with her crispy chicken jus or chicken ragu. chicken skin, tagliatelle, and Emily with her chicken wing, and of course, everyone's beloved Jim with the strawberry chicken innards. I think you're just calling them innards. He didn't use any of the chicken, and yet still was on the top. Jim does win, which means he has immunity. Which, in case you missed it, no elimination challenge in this episode. That means Jim is safe next episode.
So I...
Also means Brooke's safe.
Nice. So we get good and good. I think they were both good outcomes. But I am confused as to why, for Bravo's purposes, they didn't do what they did last season and air this episode on Wednesday and the next episode on Thursday. Wouldn't that make sense to be like, hey, since the elimination challenge is next episode, let's just make this out to be one big... two-night event. And speaking towards this episode in general, I liked getting to know these people, but I wasn't a huge fan of the episode. I thought the pacing of it was very odd, and this idea of eliminating someone right off the bat in a sudden death quickfire but having it be so drawn out was strange, and now we have an elimination challenge on top of it. I would have preferred if they did the two-night package of let's have the quickfire in one episode, the elimination in another, two people are eliminated, they go to Last Chance Kitchen, we start that up. I feel like that would be the preferred way to do things.
It was not the ideal. Top Chef, for all its, we've talked about playing with the format or the tried and true tropes, they do change things up a fair amount. They do different things. If you'll recall, there've been previous seasons. I think it was New Orleans, it was season 10, where everybody had to cook in one of the judges' different restaurants to get on, and each judge had a different challenge, and some people made it and some people didn't. We've seen other ways that people have made their way into the competition. So Top Chef is constantly playing with the format. Sometimes you have a mise en place race right at the beginning or some test that is very basic. This one was interesting in that the quick fire was chicken. We're going to give you chicken and that's all we're going to do. Do what you want with it. We had some good feedback on that. Sharon Tharp, as I mentioned earlier, who commented on Sam, also observed that there really wasn't an incentive to do more than one chicken dish. Why did they bother with that? What do you guys think about this? The design of this first challenge? It seemed to favor Sylvia and Brooke.
This is going to get old fast.
I'm going to make it work. Sylvia and Emily. It seems to favor them by actually making two dishes, but it didn't seem to hurt Jim at all that he didn't really use any chicken. So was this a complete failure of a design in the challenge?
I almost thought that it was a little bit of a test to see which contestants would potentially try to take on too much and not self-edit. I mean, we saw that, you know, Jim had planned on doing three dishes and that went down to two and then to one. And even Gerald had planned on two dishes and he kind of morphed them together into a single dish. So I almost read it more as we're going to give them kind of free reign to do whatever they want to. But the real challenge is, what can you do right, and what can you do well? And if that's one dish, so be it. We're probably not going to evaluate, you know, two versus dishes versus one dish. But I did find it very telling that only two of the contestants actually developed two dishes. Sylvia was the only contestant who had developed a dish during the 30-minute time, was able to actually serve something to the judges prior to the end of it, prior to the 30-minute, or the, sorry, prior to the hour expiring. So I almost viewed it, again, as more of a test of, will you bite off more than you can chew? And if you discover that, can you adopt on the fly?
Josh, any thoughts on this challenge design? Was this one of your least favorite Top Chef first challenges, or somewhere in the middle, blah, meh, whatever?
I'm kind of like Curtin that, like, I don't absorb the history of the show very well from season to season. Like, I couldn't say fairly that this is, like, the worst opening, you know, challenge in Top Chef history or anything like that. I can tell you, I didn't love it. I thought that you want, it's the premiere. Don't you want to like really showcase the cooking of as many people as possible and for it to culminate in this head to head between John and Gerald in this very, very uncomfortable situation in this very strange surroundings. I feel like it was just, I don't know, it was bizarre. It really did feel like the half of a 2-hour episode. Like, it really did feel like the first part of the premiere and not the entirety of the premiere. And I don't know, didn't love that. Wasn't a fan of that.
Yeah, I was almost wishing that we would have seen the newbies and the returnees pair up in some way to kind of have like a team cooking challenge or something. But that's just me.
What did you guys think about the idea of having the veterans come in to cook on their own in their own little bracket, but then have different stipulations? Like, I know Alicia Rosen asked us, do you think the vets should have been given the same quick fire challenge to make things fair / even? Or do you think it was OK they were given half the time in a harder challenge because they are vets? Did you like the idea of sort of, I guess, scaling these challenges to make the vets, to give the vets, you know, a harder thing to do half the time and more creativity, but more of an umbrella to work with, as opposed to the newbies was just, hey, cook your best chicken dish in an hour.
I was watching the newbies do their cooking. I was wondering if the returnees, what their challenge is going to be, if it was going to be the same one. I actually thought it would have been less fair if they had been given the same one, because now they're watching the newbies, you know, cooking these chickens. If they had been given chicken themselves,
chicken dish.
Exactly. Yeah. They're saying, oh, I would attack it like this. So they would have basically over an hour to plan out what their plan of attack was. And I had in my notes that, you know, before we saw what their actual challenge was, that it would have been, I thought, unfair for them to get the same challenge. But at the same time, it's not like they're being compared head to head against the newbies and the returnees. So even if they did have more time, or if they were given, or sorry, even if they did have the exact same challenge, even if they had the chance to plan out things in a more concrete way, it's not like that they were being compared on the same, using the same yardstick as the newbies were. They're still the worst person would have to go against the worst person.
What did you guys think of new Top Chef return or guest judge Graham Elliott? I think replacing, I'm not sure if it's Hugh Atchison or Richard Blais at this point,
Please let it be Blais.
It's in that role. It's in that return. It's in that guest judge role. Sometimes it's Gail. Sometimes it's the guest judge. Sometimes it's 3-4. Sometimes there is another guest judge, but this is the occasional judge throughout the season will be Graham Elliott. Any hot takes on Graham Elliott? Kurt, I know you've been to his restaurant, at least one of them.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure if it's still there. It was several years ago, probably like 4 or 5 years ago at this point, that I believe a fast service, quick service restaurant opened up in Chicago, at the River North area, where it's kind of order at the counter and there's, you know, sandwiches and sides and it was decent. It was kind of a bit pricey for a walk up to the counter and order sort of place, but also it was like, you know, quality food too. So, that had been perpetually packed like the many times I went past it before the one time I went in. So I've seen him on MasterChef Chef Junior, where he just seemed like very pleasant, very nice, very personable. But again, you're dealing with kids there, so even Gordon Ramsay was nice and pleasant and personable in that situation. But I think he's going to be the sort of person, at least he strikes me as the sort of judge who's going to kind of do the compliment sandwich, where he's going to tell you what you did right, and then he's going to tell you what you did wrong, and then he'll remind you of what you did right. So I don't think we're going to necessarily see any sort of like, you know, harshness from him. I could be completely wrong on that, though.
I can't wait to see the compliment sandwich challenge.
Yes.
I'm getting a good impression of him so far. I've always felt like when Richard Blais was a judge on the show that he was very much the kid trying to act like an adult in front of the grown-ups, that he was like, hey,
the Will Wall of
yeah, not as vehemently angry, but still like he was very much a tryhard, for lack of a better term, right? He was saying like, well, let me use all of these descriptors and really come up with fun, quirky metaphors so people will remember me. Graham Elliott, this is not his first time at the rodeo. He has not only been on Top Chef Masters before, but as you said, Kurt, he's been on a cooking reality show as a judge. He knows what makes for good judging and good sound bites. So I thought he did a really good job in this episode. It'll be interesting to see exactly what his demeanor is, because he did not seem in particularly mean, though I don't know if we necessarily need that, considering that Tom is kind of a little grizzled in his feedback to the contestants. But I'm optimistic about him.
Yeah, I mean, you can steer too far into that, obviously. If you'll recall, in previous seasons, one of the guest judges was Toby Young, and Toby Young was just making it a point to be as acerbic and negative when he gave negative feedback as possible. So it is pleasant to see Graham Elliott, who clearly has been on some of the best cooking shows in the country, but not the best cooking show in the country. So welcome to the best, Graham Elliott. We'll see ultimately what impact he has on this season. I don't know from whence I speak in terms of the kind of challenges he might bring to the table. I always loved Richard Blaze as a chef testant, but as a judge, I'll never forget the fact that one of my favorite chef testants, Adam Harvey, went home because Richard Blaze gave him a basket full of goofy ingredients like agar agar and all these molecular gastronomy based things that it was really difficult for Adam to find his way out of. And so I prefer chefs who aren't necessarily looking for that kind of niche thing in our judges, I should say. And the judges are who have a broader impression or a broader desire to kind of evaluate what's going on. Even though I really like Blaze as a chef and his imaginative work, I'm not upset to see him go as a judge, although I don't believe that he was the full guest judge for last season. I think people popped in and out. And so it's nice to see Graham Elliott. I'll be interesting to see what dynamics he brings to the table. His challenge here was very basic, very Southern shrimp and grits. There were different kinds of shrimp. They had a lot less time, as you guys have observed. The top of this shrimp and grits challenge were Brooke, Shirley, and Amanda. Shirley made a bowl of hug, which was an egg custard mixed with bacon and shrimp and grits and all these delicious comfort foods. Brooke made a great take on a scotch egg, which had the shrimp instead of sausage surrounding the egg. It was crispy. It was beautiful on the inside. It looked amazing. And then Amanda, with her kind of head-on shrimp with ham and everything that she performed or produced there, was really good. So they were on the top of this challenge. Did anything jump out to you from any of those three dishes, guys?
Josh is our resident hugger. What did you think about Shirley's name for her dish?
I don't recall what it was. Can you remind me?
It was a bowl of hug.
It was a bowl.
Graham Elliott said it was like getting a hug and then getting slapped.
Is that how you do it now, Josh?
I don't do a lot of hugging anymore. It's mostly slapping now.
Okay. Oh boy.
So I do like a bowl of slap is what you're getting at me. No, of course everyone knows I love a hug. A bowl of hug sounds delightful. I would be a fan of anything pretty much that was if you put out a dish that is called a bowl of hug and it is anything but delicious, then you're a monster, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thankfully, Shirley is not a monster because it seemed like it was delicious. And the hug slap combo is something perhaps a little interesting and a little edgy, but I think it worked out really well. And good for Shirley. It bodes really well that Shirley and Brooke are on the top here because they clearly brought a lot of talent into the season with them and strong reputations from their seasons. And they don't seem to have missed a beat.
And good job, Amanda, also being on the top, too, in terms of her being away for a couple of years and still, having her, kudos for being in the top three and, her dish being full of flavor. So I was actually pleasantly surprised to see her up there.
Okay. Can we talk about John's plate?
I mean, how is there not a comment about how disgusting that plate looked with the faux kimchi?
Like, it looked like an unwashed dish. It looked like someone had eaten off a plate with Sylvia's pasta with the sauce all over it, and then John just threw some more food on there. The kimchi was a disgusting effect.
That'd be an interesting challenge, is like, you have to take the dishes used by the first team, not wash them, and then create a dish that organically goes with whatever it is they created.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what John was after with that plating. We've seen that in some challenges that can go really well. The memorable Charlize Theron challenge with making food that looks kind of gross or gets in your face. We've seen the plating design be a factor in Top Chef. I was surprised there was no remark about how unappetizing that plate looked. Even if you go back and rewatch, when they show the kind of interstitial or the hero shots of the food that shows it how it's prepared. They look different. It's like, we can't replicate this dish because it's too messy. So we're just going to go with whatever we can find here. So I'm not sure ultimately what John was going for with that plating. John was on the bottom. There's a reason. It wasn't just the plating. The taste of his food apparently didn't really go together. It was a little bit all over the place. Mm-hmm. And that was not good for John. Who else was on the bottom? We had Casey on the bottom, unfortunately, for her, that she just maybe has not got her head back in the game yet and did not produce just a dish that didn't really come together. It was, I think, remarked that it was tasty, but it wasn't enough. She had some coconut oil with her grits and some corn. It was a little maybe undercooked on the grits. And then my autocorrect in my notes changes Katsuji to the word Matsuri, M-A-T-S-U-R-I. So I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is a more valid word in my dictionary than Katsuji, but Matsuri was also on the bottom and did not really refine himself. Came right back and did the same thing.
It was a great moment too, when he's like, "Ah, shit!" You know, he's just like, he's like, "Ah, I Katsuji'd again."
Well, we should also point out that in between Top Chef Boston and now, Katsuji was actually on another Top Chef. He was on Top Chef Mexico, in which case I did not think he won, but it seems like Katsuji had some time to compete in other Top Chefs. So he definitely seems like he's gone around the block this time. He's definitely more. He actually might be the most recent three-timer. We think Casey might be the only three-timer, but Katsuji might be the more recent one in comparison.
Interesting.
He also appeared in as a random guest, right?
Oh,
in the season of the American version of Top Chef.
And he was not subtitled nor given the lower third.
No. So Katsuji has not been distant from our Top Chef watching. Kurt, have you been podcasting about Top Chef Mexico?
Yeah, that's why it's no longer around.
But yeah, I don't know what to make of Katsuji. He needs to get his head in the game. Sheldon as well was not on the bottom, but definitely, as we've talked about, needs to get his head in the game. He made a dashi poached, corn, pickled cabbage kind of thing with some miso. It just didn't really come together, and I don't think it really spoke to where Sheldon was on the top of his game. I wonder if Sheldon is not riding on his success a little bit, and he maybe wasn't a little hungrier before. I hope that's not true, because he was so damn lovable on his season. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in an actual elimination challenge if people answer the bell that didn't necessarily answer it in this quickfire. I'm wondering if there's any other observations from anybody about the veterans in their quickfire.
As I'm watching the episodes, I like to look at each set of dishes, kind of figure out, okay, what's the one thing that I really want to try? What's the one thing that like looks tastiest to me? From the newbies, it was actually Emily's buttermilk black pepper biscuit chicken sandwich. But actually, you know, Brooke's Scotch egg looked amazing. That was something on there that that I was really would have wanted to try. So I was actually glad to see that she kind of came out on top in this challenge.
Yeah, I have a shrimp allergy, and that still looked like something I would go ahead and eat.
Yeah,
anyway,
so I guess would that be the one dish, since you are allergic to shrimp, would that be the one that you would try to spar with death for in order to actually get a taste of it?
Yeah, I mean, because normally where this comes up is I'm at like a hibachi or like a Benihana place, and they're like, "Oh, I flipped this shrimp into your pocket. Do you want to eat it now? It's been in my hat. Do you want to eat it?" And that's an easy no. So this one is a lot more difficult to say no to. And I don't know. It was a really inventive thing. This is what Brooke is known for. She's brilliant. She combined a lot of ingredients on her season, put things together that didn't necessarily seem to go together, especially combinations of proteins that really knocked people's socks off. So to see her do this, I think was really brilliant. So I really was impressed with what she was doing there. And I should say, even in the newbies kind of cook-off, Jamie got a lot of credit from Tom right away for breaking his chicken down in a really fast and organized way. As I said, he was focused on what he was doing, so that looked good. People did make good dishes there. It wasn't like the food. I didn't think the food in one quickfire was notably better than the other. I thought both had some really good stuff, and both showed some promise and some people that we know can bring it into the future rounds of this competition. So overall, even though we had 16 people cooking in a quickfire with no elimination challenge, we did have a lot of cooking. We did get a look at each person's individual dish. And the only other thing that stood out to me is that Graham Elliott's teeth must have been really expensive.
Yeah, his teeth is the same shade as his glasses.
Yeah.
If I get those glasses, then I gotta be Graham Elliott for Halloween at some point, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I feel like I can rock that.
You can.
Yeah, I think you could do the Graham Elliott. I think you could, if you grew, can you go beyond the Neard at any point, Josh, or no?
No.
Because I was thinking BJ Smith, maybe.
Maybe a few decades from now. Maybe a few decades from now I could pull off the BJ Smith.
A few decades from now you'll be old as John Tesar, so you could probably go as
Josh Tesar. Yeah, that'll be perfect.
Josh Tesar. I'm not gonna look as good as John Tesar.
So anything else from the quickfires, guys, or should we talk about what ultimately proceed? Yeah, should we just get into the impending doom?
All right,
Gerald.
Panzanella? Yeah.
It's called sudden death too, which also doesn't really help matters given
it's just no good. We had a lot of feedback about this. Meg Quinn had tweeted and talked about it. We had some other people that had kind of weighed in as to the appropriateness of this. Of course, Top Chef is in Charleston, South Carolina. And as John observed, and as Gerald observed, Charleston is not a city that hides from a lot of the problems. I think part of the reason that Top Chef is there is that Charleston took a big hit because of the horrible shootings that occurred there, which was the last time it was really on the national radar in a big way. So it is a gorgeous city with a very dirty past. It, like a lot of the cities in the South, it is not a city that shies away from that past. I think that it's funny because some of the cartoons that exist in the world do a really good job of summarizing this, which is you can get rid of this past. You can pretend that it didn't exist, but by getting rid of it and pretending that it exists, you're just ignoring it, and you can't ignore it. You cannot ignore the things that went on. It is unfortunately part of these cities' past, and I think that's what John was getting at by saying, like, they should embrace it. They should be aware of this is their history. And Top Chef plans these things out in advance, so they could never have known exactly how this was going to play out. Someone that had a really tough story, someone who did say he had some post-slave blood in his bloodline, versus a guy who was not that. Even though his mom was a civil rights activist, It was a very stark comparison. And when they're riding up to that plantation, it was a very difficult thing for, I think, everybody that was involved, as viewers, as the people that were in those cars. I don't know. How do you guys feel like Top Chef handled this? Anybody have a scorching hot take one way or the other?
Well, the delivery of the introduction to this challenge was so weird to me, because you have Padma very solemnly talking about the history of Boone Hall. And again, I felt like that was very appropriate. It was very sad and a little awkward to be in that scenario, but it's good that they acknowledge the history. And then you have Gail kind of pipe it and be like, but also they host an oyster roast here as well. And it's like, I can understand that's a good tie-in to what they're doing the challenge for, but I don't know, that was like tonal whiplash to me.
Yeah, and I think when they, like, and when she turns it over to Gerald and, like, says, you know, how does it feel to be here? I thought that was fine. But then it was like, then that awkward moment, then you turn it right over to John and say, how about you? How do you feel? And kudos, I think John gave the only sensitive answer you probably could have given at that point. Like, I would not have wanted to be in his shoes for, like, you know, Gerald talking about, you know, the post-slavery blood that's in his veins. He says, you know, it feels very surreal, but it's comforting. And then to go over to John, like, what's John gonna say? I mean,
I think he did great with that.
I would not have known, like, how to handle that. And I think he handled himself in the kind of that pre-challenge chatter commendably. So hats off to both of them.
I got to tell you, the most uncomfortable I think I've ever felt watching Top Chef is when they're riding up and John is in the car with Gerald and John says, this is where slaves slept. And Gerald says, I know.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. That was really rough. And I've been to a couple sites like this. I've not been to that particular plantation, but I've been to sites like this in Tennessee and in other states, just point south of Kentucky. And it is I'm sure other people have been to similar sites of atrocities that have occurred in the world or in the United States. And it's just a quiet calm that is eerie and affecting. It's very affecting. And I don't know what else to say other than Charleston does not hide from that. They can't hide from it. It is a part of their history. South Carolina, very complicated state. They're the ones who wanted to plant a flag on flying the Confederate flag at their state house when it was first becoming a real national issue. The more recent governors have tried to be more inclusive about what's going on. And I think that's a state that is working hard to understand its place in the Union and embracing the history that it has. And I do think bringing shows like Top Chef, which have national appeal on the Bravo network, are part of that. This is not something that is that South Carolina is going to want to present itself to the world as a very negative image. So this is something they're cognizant of, that Top Chef has hopefully been cognizant of. Top Chef is never one to toe the line on these civil issues. It didn't come off that way at the time, but Top Chef married so many gay couples during that episode before the Supreme Court had ruled that gay marriage was appropriate and should be recognized recognized across the country. So Top Chef has always sought to kind of stick their neck out. I do think that's in keeping with Bravo's program line in general, which is not afraid to shy away from social issues or cultural shows. And so Top Chef's going to be very delicate. They're probably going to misstep at a couple points in the season. It's a definite clear choice to have Gerald and John in the same car as they're riding up. They didn't have to do that. And your mileage may vary on whether that was effective, and your mileage may vary based on your background, whether you're closer to Gerald's background or John's background or somewhere close to neither. But Top Chef is going to, I think, try to be sensitive to these things. But you're right, Mike, the tonal shift with the, and they also have an oyster bake. Very difficult. I don't know how you come out of that. I don't know how you come out of the harrowing feeling that you feel when you show up at a place like that and you end up at an oyster bake. It's difficult. So I think Top Chef's doing the best they can. We'll have to see, and we'll have to hold them to the carpet if they do wrong in future challenges in this season. But this one was a hell of a way to start off, I got to say.
Well, let's I guess we can crack open this sudden death quick fire and see if we find any pearls inside of it.
Or crabs.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good one.
Or little
good
crabs.
One, Mike. Or crabs, yes. Angelo, by the way, in his season, had a very difficult time in a crab challenge because crabs were not something unfamiliar to him. Speaking of Smug Smuggington.
There's an entire text thread between Antonio and myself where we come up with several leading clues as to why Angelo may actually be a serial killer.
Yeah, I'm all on board with that. I still think Angelo may be a serial killer, but that's another podcast for another time. Perhaps we'll cross that over.
That
with
podcast
TV
is called Serial, but it's spelled C-E-R-E-A-L because it's the food angle on Serial.
And it's about Angelo opening a serial restaurant, which were all the rage for a couple of years.
Times Square.
Serial restaurants, they resonate so much with my being.
So with the oyster roast, the it's very similar to the chicken challenge in that you're only given oysters, and it's basically do what you can do what you want to do within a certain period of time. John pivoted to a French background that he had. He used a special weapon that he brought with him in his bag of holding, brings out the black truffle, and that is a game changer, it seems like, in this challenge. Gerald wanted to go into a different direction and do a Thai oyster thing with a very common sauce that is served with oysters, the mignonette, but he wanted to do it with Thai flavors. And so oysters and mignonette, very common thing. You bring the Thai into it, not common. And John's dish seemed to be out of the loop. We had a question from Meh on Twitter, which is Dylan_1066. And the question was, is soup really an oyster roast? Are oysters the main focus of the soup? John won, but what did you guys think of that? Is John's dish something where you thought was in the spirit of the challenge and did really well in the challenge? Did it play out the way you guys thought it should have with what we saw them do with the oysters?
I mean, I thought for sure Gerald was going to win.
Same.
I was really surprised. I thought that this was going to be kind of like that classic reality all-star thing where, like, they knock a veteran out really quickly. It's kind of a big personality. John is talking about how he's got this terrible reputation that he is desperate to fix. For him to go out first would just be like a real tone setter for the season. And I also just thought there's no way that Gerald is getting eliminated for this challenge. Just thought, no universe. The optics on that are no good. And also, his food looked great. Of the two, that's the one I'd want to eat. And there is a restaurant here in my neighborhood that serves oysters with like a bunch of different mignonette sauces, and it's awesome. And one of them is a Thai mignonette, and it's so good. So I could only imagine that was really, really tasty what he came up with. So yeah, going into it, like I was all in. I would have bet everything on John going home, and I was really floored that it didn't work out that way.
And just from a description perspective, I'm no offense to the people that worked with John in that French restaurant, but the idea of cream and oysters just does not sound appetizing to me.
Yeah, and he poached the oysters with the cream. So it was an interesting preparation. It seemed to me to turn on the fact that Gerald promised Thai but did not really bring enough Thai flavors. It wasn't spicy enough for Tom, and that's a Top Chef mistake and a lot of people make when they come in, over-seasoning or under-seasoning. Under-seasoning is usually the story of the day. Food isn't usually seasoned enough for Top Chef standards. Tom likes a really bold flavored thing, and by promising Thai and not bringing the heat, sometimes I think you can overpromise and underdeliver. That is also a classic Top Chef mistake. where you don't have a problem. And we saw Annie have this issue with the Panzanella thing in the newbies quickfire. Don't say something's a thing if it's not a thing. And so by calling it Ty, I do wonder if Gerald put himself in a bad position, whereas John went with a flavor combination, the earthiness of the truffle with the oyster flavor. That was really appealing. And I do think that's what it turns on. Whether it was a soup or not, the oyster flavor was really brought out by what John chose to mix in terms of the ingredients, whereas Gerald's flavors just weren't as bold, even though both dishes seemed to be very successful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to turn to, was the fact that, like, in the commentary, they kind of said that, you know, there was a more developed oyster flavor in John's dish. And, you know, it's an oyster challenge, so that's, I think, where we'll potentially put him on top. I was a little concerned for him when Tom kind of comments during the tasting that the oysters are totally raw. And John has to say, actually, they are gently poached. So I thought that was going to be a strike against them. Maybe the raw oyster was actually what gave it more of the developed flavor, but he did use an oyster liquor, apparently.
yeah, thankfully, wasn't serving it to school kids.
Silva, exactly. Why have you stolen my powers?
Oh, no, gosh. But, Mike, you're banned.
Heroes is also, you would just call the superhero version, the food version of that show, Heroes.
Yes, it's a bunch of anthropomorphic sandwiches.
Yeah. Sorry, that's all I'm here to contribute, by the way.
Heroes.
That's a big contribution, though, Josh. It's a very vital part of what we're doing here. Yeah. I completely agree with you, Josh, about the optics and about what universally felt right versus wrong. But that hasn't always played out the way I think people wanted to on Top Chef and in other competitions. And the way this just plays out is not always the way people think that it will or the way that it should. And I think it's the show's job to portray it as even as possible to make us feel like it could be anybody. But I think it's difficult when you're making a reality TV show, and this has been all the rage in the reality TV world, and you present an edit which makes people feel like the result should be one way and the result is actually the other way. Maybe you haven't done the best job that you could do as a TV presenter or as a producer. Magical Elves usually the best, and I'm not saying they did a bad job here, but everything seemed in favor of Gerald winning here. But I still feel like the feedback we heard from the judges made me understand why John won. So I didn't feel, I mean, I felt like I would rather have seen Gerald continue in the competition, but I did feel like the result was at least valid, or at least validated by what the judges said. Anything else from the episode before we get into our draft, guys? And we could talk about some key moments from the episode in our draft as well.
No, I'm eager to draft the team. Since you were able to crush us last time, even though the team shifted so many placements around, I'm excited to try to overthrow you this season.
That's fine. I appreciate the
finally get to draft.
Yeah, this is good. Josh was robo-drafted last year. Did not end up with the most ideal team as a result, and did not get some of his
not
favorites.
Great. Francis, yeah, the number great. One pick was really contentious.
So we're going to do this. Kurt, you are the tabulator, as we all know, and you are the man who has good plans for this. So why don't you tell us both the plan that you had for how to work the Last Chance Kitchen winner into this mix, as well as then revealing the randomized draft order that you've come up with.
Okay, yeah, we are going to do a snake draft. So we're going to go kind of picks 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then the person who makes the fourth pick also makes the fifth pick, and it goes back up the charts again, 6, 7, 8. And we are going to draft the 16 contestants of Top Chef 14. There's the 15 contestants still in the game. Contestant number 16 is not Gerald, but contestant 16, which you can draft, is the whoever comes back from Last Chance Kitchen. So even if, for instance, Mike had a certain person on their team, they get eliminated, go to Last Chance Kitchen and come back. But if Antonio drafts that Last Chance Kitchen's position, then he basically steals Mike's person. So there will be an open spot for picking up the person who comes back from Last Chance Kitchen. And keep in mind that that is somebody who I believe goes right to the finals.
All right, so we'll have that. We'll have that play in, and instead of Kurt picking George and just writing him out all the way to the end, we'll have this play out a little differently on this season. So without further ado, I guess, Kurt, can you give us the randomized draft order?
So first up in the draft, I'll give you the order. It is Mike, followed by Josh, followed by Antonio, and I, of course, once again, draw randomly last.
Are we snaking this, Kurt?
Yes, we are. So I'll do fourth and fifth.
Okay. All right. Oh, wow. First draft. So much
I don't
power.
Like my spot. Not a fan of my spot.
One man shouldn't have all that power. So it's tough because I feel like there are definitely, I'm going to prep a vet with my first pick. I feel like there are definitely two that I'm really looking at. The question is, do I go for Brooke? Because Brooke won the quickfire, and she says, hey, person who wins the first challenge, even though it's not the first elimination challenge, usually does well in the season.
That's a winner quote, Mike.
It's a good quote, but at the same time, I love Shirley, and I know that she's going to get snatched up next. So do I go with my heart, or do I go with my head? I mean, I feel like I'd be stupid not to pick Brooke here, so give me Brooke.
No, I wanted you to go to Shirley so I could have Brooke.
Brooke is off the board. Josh, you pick next.
All right, I'll take Jim's.
I'm taking
Jim's. Not a tough choice. It was going to be Brooke or it was going to be Jim's. Of all of the new people, I believe it was Pia, in fact, who said, like, in edgic terms, this was OTTP. This was a really good start for Jim's, and I just love him. So I will ride or die with Jim's. I hope that he does really well. If he does not do well, we will burn down together.
I will happily take Shirley.
Nice. Okay. So I am up fourth. Well, they're looking historically at my draft. There's actually a very, very slim pickings when it comes to bland, boring, vanilla white guys on this season. The closest I can really get, I got to draft Sam. I'm stoked to draft Sam. I think he's dope. So I'm going to pick Sam. I'm not going to get a chance to pick again until it comes all the way back around to me. So I kind of got to take I feel it's kind of a weak way to go, but I got to take the last chance kitchen position.
Wow. The return right off the table.
Yeah.
I'm not shocked by this at all. This is not a surprising development in my world. This is Kurt loves that kind of skin in this game. I think this crispy chicken skin in this game. So,
you know what? If he hadn't done it, I was going to do it. So yeah, hats off to the move.
Yeah, because I'm going to be picking again at like 12 and 13. So like all the prime pickings are coming off of that chicken before it gets around to me, and I'm going to be stuck with the innards.
It's going to be innards.
Just get some strawberries. You got a good dish going on there.
And some ranch dressing, a.k.a. aioli.
It will be great, Kurt, when you get Sam and then Sam. When Sam is the one who comes back into the competition.
Yep. That's the downside of it, yeah.
Really looking forward to that. Speaking of looking forward to, I have a real Silva's choice here, or Sylvia's choice, as the case may be. And I don't know exactly what I'm going to do here. Do I go with my heart or with my head, Mike? I will pick Silva. Okay. Silva.
That makes this easier because I will pick Sylvia. Sylvia's my pick.
Two newbies for Team Wiggler.
Yes.
And Mike, you are up with consecutive picks at positions 8 and 9.
Oh, God. All right. See, all these other newbies are so blasé outside of that, so I might have
Richard
to go
Richard blasé.
Oh God, hopefully not. Hopefully no was a Parmesan snow or whatever he brought up when he was guessing.
Oh, I love Parmesan snow. It was great when he came back to life.
No spoilers.
All right, so
who is slow walking their way onto your team, Mike, with the intros from this season?
Yeah, I really want to pick Sheldon, but I'm concerned with his injuries that he's gonna Michael Scoopin his way out of the game, and Michael Scoopin in Australia, nothing else.
Yeah, let's not go there.
But you know what? I might want to. You know what? Hell, let's stack my team with Team Seattle. I'm gonna pick Sheldon and John. Why
oh my
is everyone
gosh.
Picking the people that I want to pick right before I go there? Ugh, it's infuriating.
You got John. I thought Kurt would get John and with Sam make team old guys.
I'm just 38.
Josh, who you got next, buddy?
Well, now I feel pressure to like put a veteran on my team because I don't have any.
But and, I also
like,
just took two of them.
Yeah, and like these, you know,
no,
these
there's
types,
some great vets out there.
These types of seasons, like usually a vet, I feel like, does win. But I don't feel like any of the ones that are still on the board are going to. So I guess I'm going to commit to the newbie cause, and I'm going to take hand me over BJ Smith.
I was going to take him and do Team North Pacific Northwest, where they all wear Crocs.
Yeah. No, I will be wearing these Crocs moving forward. I'm investing in the new talent this year.
I'm going to invest in some new talent right here, and I'm going to pucker some b-holes and pick Jamie.
Okay. I get my last two picks back to back, 12 and 13. I'm actually going to take newbie Amanda. I mean, veteran Amanda off her. she plays in the top three. I'd like to think that she's going to be able to kind of, you know, turn things around.
Let's hope so.
Oh, I am torn between just the emotional connection to Katsuji and you know what?
Casey is still left, Kurt.
Oh, God. You know what? Thank you. Yes. You know what?
Antonio, what are you doing? Antonio, what is that?
Because he wants Katsuji.
Unbelievable.
I know. I was going to take Emily because I kind of like the attitude. You know what? I will leave veteran Casey to somebody else. I don't have any new blood on the board. I will take Emily. I will leave.
Don't be upset, Josh, because I could have taken Casey anyway. I will not do that, though, because I actually was trying to talk Kurt out of taking who I wanted, which was my bluegrass friend. I want to take Chef Annie.
Okay.
Chef Annie. So who's left here?
Casey jumped down my throat for resetting that before, but I'll go ahead and do it. You have Casey and Katsuji. Is that right?
Yeah.
I gotta go Casey. Like, I can't possibly pick Katsuji. Like, I can't actively put Katsuji on my team.
Josh,
like, if Katsuji fell in my lap, first of all, I'd be nervous. I'd be upset. But I would deal with it. And, like, that would be a person on my team that I would be able to you know, I would make it work with zero confidence that that this person would yield the win. But I can't actively choose Katsuji.
He is the self-styled best Mexican kosher chef in the U.S. Maybe only. He didn't say that, but I would think maybe only. But best.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I think in the long run, ultimately, I would bet that Katsuji goes further than Casey. But gun to my head, like, who could actually win Top Chef? I would take Casey over Katsuji. So in terms of, like, my prediction, I bet that Casey goes before Katsuji this season. But if I'm wrong about that, I think of the two of them that could actually win the whole competition, I would put my money on Casey.
That's fine. Katsuji's quirky enough to fit in with the general demeanor of the Pacific Northwest, so my theming holds.
Recap of the teams. With Mike has Brooke, Sheldon, John, and Katsuji. Josh, you have Jim's, Sylvia, BJ, and Casey. Antonio, you have Shirley, Silva, Jamie, and Annie. And I have Sam, Amanda, Emily, and whoever comes back from Last Chance Kitchen.
It's a money Sam. Spot. That's really good.
All right. So those are the reset teams. And I think that's the end of this Top Chef podcast. Does anyone have a hashtag suggestion for people to use if they want to talk about this podcast episode on Twitter?
Matt Surrey.
I had bowl of slap.
That's good.
All right. So use hashtag bowl of slap. We'll bring Matt Surrey into the mix throughout this season. But yeah. Hashtag bowl of slap. If you want to just tweet about this particular podcast episode or find tweets about this podcast episode, use the hashtag bowl of slap. And you can always tweet at us. I am AC Mazzaro with 2 Z's and 1 R. Mike is at a Mike Bloom type. Kurt, what is your Twitter handle?
At Kurt Clark with 2 C's.
With yes. And Josh, you are?
I'm at Rod Howard.
Yes, what Josh, a nice Sam delivery on your Twitter
Josh,
handle.
Josh is terrifyingly at Round Howard in a whisper. He's Sam. Yes, exactly. So you can always tweet at any of us to talk about this episode. Tweet us questions during the episodes as they air or comments as we go forward. Going forward in the weeks to come, the schedule on this podcast will be a little bit touch and go. Not all of us may be here from episode to episode. We may have some guests filling in from time to time. So look forward to that. But that will be TBD. We'll try to get these up as soon as we can after the episode when as many of us can record as possible. But we will be doing this weekly after each episode of Top Chef. As always, you can find us at robhasawebsite.com in the Reality Rehapups section. We do hope to possibly have a feed that you can subscribe to either for Reality Rehapups, if we're going to just be in that feed, or a dedicated Top Chef feed. We'll have more information on that next week, hopefully. But you can subscribe to our podcast there when we post that up. You can always find us at robhasawebsite.com or under the feed for Reality Rehapups in the meantime. Anything else, guys?
No, I'm excited for this season, even though I wasn't a huge fan of where they left things off in the first episode. It seems like we're on a little bit of an even playing ground between the new people and the returning people. It's an interesting mix of personalities, so I'm just excited to see. Charleston's also a community that I know nothing about, so I'm excited to learn a lot about it as well in the coming weeks.
Should be a good
Me
time.
Me too. Yep. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and I'm really glad to be back with you guys talking about Top Chef, one of my favorite TV shows, period. I'm so glad that it's back. I'm really looking forward to the dynamic mix of people on this season and the no doubt glory and wonderful food that that will bring. So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch you next week.